Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Outbeat Now, one of the four shows for and about the LGBT community you can hear every month here on Outbeat Radio and only on KRCB's Radio 91. I'm Greg Moralia. My co-host Jeff Basham is off tonight. In our first segment, I'll be talking with Lenny Broberg, a former Mr. Leather International and current member of the San Francisco Police Department. If you watched the television coverage of this year's San Francisco Pride Parade, you saw him both marching in uniform in the parade and then hosting the coverage for Coffee TV 20. But most notably, Lenny is a longtime community activist who's given so much of himself to many organizations. He's a great guy with a wonderful story. And then later on tonight's Outbeat Youth segment, I'll be talking with longtime colleague Shane Windmeyer, who is the executive director of Campus Pride, the nation's leading LGBT organization supporting and serving colleges and universities. And we'll be talking about how you, as an LGBT college freshman, can get ready for the first day of school this fall. And we'll also be talking with him about the Campus Pride National Voices in Action Spotlight series that we'll be featuring throughout this school year as part of the Outbeat Youth segment. All of that's coming up right after the Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, July 22nd, 2012. If Boston Mayor Tom Menino has his way, Chick-fil-A may be banned from his city. The fast food chain, which has donated to anti-gay causes and whose executives this week admitted to anti-gay stances while saying the company doesn't discriminate, is looking for locations in Boston, one near the famous Freedom Trail, a series of historic sites connected to the American Revolution. But Menino says that area, or any location in Boston, isn't appropriate for a business with such policies. He told the Boston Herald, quote, "Chick-fil-A doesn't belong in Boston. You can't have a business in the city of Boston that discriminates against a population. We're an open city. We're a city that's the forefront of inclusion. That's the Freedom Trail. That's where it all started. And we're not going to have a company like Chick-fil-A or whatever the hell the name is on our Freedom Trail." And in Orlando, Florida, culinary icon, entrepreneur, and philanthropist Kat Cora was inducted into the American Academy of Chefs Hall of Fame last week as the 2012 Celebrated Chef. Cora is the first female chef to ever receive this recognition by the American Culinary Foundation. Since 2007, the AAC has named one celebrated chef annually for their contributions to the culinary world, and this year Cora's dedication and passion to the profession garnered her this distinguished title. She shares this honor with an incredible list of past recipients, including Charlie Palmer, James Beard, and Thomas Keller. Cora lives with her wife, Jennifer Cora, and their four sons in Santa Barbara, California. Her contributions go way beyond the kitchen as the founder and president of Chefs for Humanity, her charity that is dedicated to preventing hunger, reducing obesity, and providing help to those in emergency conditions. And here locally, Face to Face has announced Art for Life, the wine country's premier art auction, which will happen on September 8th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Mary Agatha Firth Center in Windsor. This legendary auction will feature work by more than 200 talented local artists with the culinary and winemaking talents from the region featured for the event's participants to enjoy. What started in 1988 as a grassroots effort on behalf of the local artist community to combat the AIDS epidemic, Art for Life has become Face-to-Face's most important fundraising event of the year, raising crucial funds needed to provide services to people living with HIV and AIDS in Sonoma County. Thanks to the wonderful sponsors, 100% of the money raised during the event will be used to ensure that every man, woman, and child living with HIV/AIDS in the county has access to life-changing services. Some 250 works will be available for purchase, including original paintings, photography, drawings, sculpture, and jewelry. The benefit will offer delicious hors d'oeuvres by A La Heart Catering, Dirk's Parkside Cafe, and the Jimtown Store, along with complimentary premier Sonoma County wine tasting. For the past 24 years, artists, art patrons, sponsors, wine and food purveyors, and the community at large have responded with enthusiasm to this event, raising more than $2 million for Face to Face to provide both support and services to those living with HIV/AIDS. You can view the online art gallery and purchase tickets or become a sponsor by going to www.f2f.org. And for those of you Glee fans out there, Chris Colfer, who plays the gay character Kurt Hummel on the show, will be in Petaluma this week signing copies of his new children's storybook, The Land of Stories, The Wishing Spell. Colfer, now 22, began writing his book when he was just 10 years old. It's the story of twins whose grandmother had given them a book of fairy tales and who then end up entering a land where the fairy tales become true. Chris will be at the Copperfields Bookstore located at 140 Kentucky Street in Petaluma this Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, July 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m., Spectrum's Men's Mixer will happen at the Four Points Sheraton, 1010 Northgate Drive in San Rafael. And on Tuesday, July 24th from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group meets at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Thursday, July 26th at 6:30 p.m., the Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Support Group will meet at the Face-to-Face Center, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Thursday at 7 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Group meeting will take place at Santa Rosa High School in the Teacher's Lounge. And finally, on Friday, July 22nd from noon to 2 p.m., Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, hosts Positive Women's Group at 6550 Railroad Square in Forestville. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Say it, say it, say it. Tell it like it is. All right, let's get right to it tonight with our first guest, who's doing some amazing and incredible work supporting the LGBT community here in the Bay Area. And if you've been at all involved in organizations like Gay Softball, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or any number of groups that have responded to the AIDS crisis, then you've probably met Lenny Broberg. He's currently an inspector with the San Francisco Police Department and one of the TV hosts who covers the San Francisco Pride Parade for Coffee TV 20. Lenny, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Well, thanks, Greg. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And let's start out a little bit. Tell us how you got involved with the San Francisco Police Department. Where did that come from?
You know, I always wanted to be a police officer, and my brother and sister were police officers. My little sister started out as a state trooper in Illinois, and now she's down in Florida. And my little brother is actually down in Florida also. They both work for the same department.
Okay, so what brought you out here to California?
Well, I actually came out here on vacation about 30 years ago when I was 25. And all right, so there we go. Now we know how old I am. I came out here 30 years ago on a vacation, happened to find a job, which was basically unheard of, went back to Wisconsin, closed everything up, and a month later I was back here in San Francisco and never left. It's been home ever since.
So what was it like 30 years ago to be gay and then trying to get into law enforcement?
You know, I haven't been in the department for the full 30 years. I did other jobs. I didn't come into the police department until I was 39. So I've been here since June of 95. It wasn't as hard as some of the gay and lesbians when they had to first come in like 30 years ago. And some of them are retiring now and they will tell you how difficult it was. But it still wasn't as easy as it is now. Things are constantly changing, constantly evolving.
Sure. Well, things definitely have changed from the time of Stonewall when the police were fighting with members of the LGBT community. And now, as a police officer, you were marching in the parade. But you also hosted the parade for TV 20 and have done that for a couple of years. Tell us about how you got involved as a TV host.
Well, it started out a few years ago when Cron 4 in San Francisco actually used to broadcast the parade. Donna Sache, who is a good friend of mine, was one of the co-hosts, was selected as a grand marshal. So they needed somebody that could fill in for her from the community, that knew all the groups, was involved in the community, and could give some of the background as each of the groups came by for the parade. So she was a grand marshal, and I co-hosted that year with Catherine Heenan and Jan Wall, who is a good friend to the GLBT community. I have been doing it ever since. Donna is the main host. And then when Channel 4 gave it up and it went over to TV 20 and Clear Channel, She continued as one of the hosts with Sebastian Kunz and Michelle Miao. And I come in as a guest host. I get to march in the parade. I have marched in the parade every year since I came into the department in 95 with the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender officers, because I thought it was very important for there to be a male presence. Because when I first started marching in the parade, there were only one or two men that would march in the parade. And in fact, this year we have our first gay man that has been promoted beyond sergeant, and he became a lieutenant. We are very excited and celebrating that.
So as you look back at history and then in your own experience with the parade, give us a sense of how it's changed. I know a lot of people, you know, sort of bantered back and forth, maybe in a negative way about pride's become so commercialized and there's a lot of straight people coming now. What change have you seen take place?
Well, you know, you have to understand is that, you know, you get a lot of those comments, especially from younger people that weren't around 30 years ago when AIDS first came. And there was a lot of political activism and anger around, you know, a situation or a disease in our community. And the government was marginalizing us. And you go from a president many, many years ago that wouldn't even say the word AIDS to now a president that is coming out in support of gay and lesbian marriage. You have to stop and look at how did our community evolve to that point? How did we get there? And a lot of that was around the activism, and a lot of that was around the anger. You know, when I stop and look at the pride parades 30 years ago, there was a lot of anger, a lot of activism. Then as we started making progress in our community and we started building alliances and partnerships with corporations that could help us, that could give us money, that could give us resources to make our community better and to make the living situations of many people within our community better, you know, I mean, that's a positive thing. And when you start looking at the fact that you have a lot of straight people that are coming to the parade, it just shows you that we have evolved to the point where we can have a good time, where we can have fun, we can still get our message out. And it really comes down to the basic thing that we're really no different than anybody else. All right. We all want the same things. We want to have fun. We want to have love. We want to have laughter in our life. And that makes us no different from anybody else.
And I couldn't agree more. Now, hosting the Pride Parade isn't the only event you've been involved with. Tell us about your experience this year hosting the auctions for GLAAD in San Francisco, LA, and New York.
It was a lot of fun because you have people coming together to support a cause that and donate money that will help people that they have never met. And that is a reaffirmation for me in human nature. When I get to work with organizations like that and help raise money for causes that I truly believe in, it really is a lot of fun. The one in New York was a lot of fun. The one in LA was a lot of fun. The one in San Francisco was a lot of fun. And you have people stepping up and giving of themselves. Like when we were in New York, John Stamos came up on stage and I was able to auction off a kiss with him for $5,000.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one who stepped up for that, right? There were some others involved. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah, that was crazy. And that was spur of the moment. I was up there with Corey Monty and Naya Rivera, and I was doing this auctioning off a kiss between the two of them because Naya said that she was going to go for more than Corey, and then all of a sudden John Stamos jumped up, and it was great.
So all three of them did it, right?
All three of them did it.
And that was really a fun and an amazing moment. We have the audio clip from that event with Lenny auctioning off a kiss with John Stamos, Corey Monteith from Glee, and Naya Rivera. Here, take a listen.
All right, here we go. Somebody want to give me $5,000 and you can kiss John here. $5,000. I got $5,000 right back there. Okay. I got $5,000 right back there for John. I got $5,000. I got $5,000 right here for Corey, and I got $5,000 right there for Naya. Here's what we're gonna do. Unless anybody wants to give me $7,500 for any of them, I'm gonna call it a tie. Any $7,500s? No? $5,000 once, $5,000 twice, sold for $5,000.
All right.
And you can John, you can stay right here. Oh, where do we go?
John, you're going to need this.
Thank you.
John.
Do we have a room upstairs or something? What does this happen?
No. It's only a kiss. Will all the successful bidders please come up to the stage?
Come on, baby.
All the successful bidders. Look at this. And in case you're all wondering, Corey will probably be on Smash in 2 weeks. Here we go. There you go.
I got the better prize. Come to Daddy over here, baby. Come to Uncle Jesse. What's your name?
Valentine.
I'm Valentine, my baby.
Oh, I love it. He goes, I'm nervous, like it's your first time. All right, there we go. Hold on. All right, and y'all set? Here, I'll hold the microphone, because you don't want to drop her. All right, everybody set? Everybody, help me along on the count of three, all right? Get ready. One.
A kiss to remember for those donors, I'm sure. You can see the video from the event on YouTube. Just do a search for Lenny Broberg and GLAAD. So tell us about some of the other events. Were there other moments like New York at either San Francisco or LA?
When I was here in San Francisco, Rita Moreno stepped up and offered canapes and cocktails at her home for up to 8 people, and that went for $15,000. That is $20,000 that was raised for to get our message out from the GLBT community by our straight friends. So when I sit here and I have to listen to people go, our pride celebrations have gotten too commercial, there are too many straight people involved. And then I stop and I look at people like that are giving of themselves to help us, you know, so we can achieve that sense of normalcy and achieve the civil rights that our straight counterparts in society have. I just sort of have to look at them and go, I don't think you get the full picture.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's like so much of history. If you haven't actually lived through it, it's sometimes really hard to truly understand it. Well, GLAAD isn't the only organization you've been involved with. Tell us about your work with some local community groups here in the Bay Area.
Oh, gosh. I've been involved like with the AIDS Emergency Fund for, gosh, like almost the last 30 years. They raise money and do emergency grants to people living with HIV and with AIDS, up to $500 a year to help pay for rent, medications, PG&E bills. I do a lot of work with PAWS, Pets Are Wonderful Support. I do a lot of work with the Breast Cancer Emergency Fund, which is an offshoot of the AIDS Emergency Fund, because in the initial days of the AIDS crisis, straight women and our lesbian sisters stepped up and helped, you know, the men that were getting sick and dying. And this was a response to that, because we had to help, you know, even though there are men that get breast cancer, the predominant or the large majority of the people that get breast cancer are women. So we decided to help our lesbian and straight sisters that helped us at the beginning stages of the AIDS crisis. You know, there's just so many different organizations that I work with. I work with the Gay Men's Chorus, the Golden Gay Chorus, and a lot of straight organizations, too, that do a lot of things that I truly believe in.
Now, do you sing with the chorus?
I don't sing with the chorus. I just help them raise money so they can get their message out there.
Okay. Well, give me a sense of what drives you. I mean, you spend an awful lot of your own personal time and devote a lot of money and energy into supporting these organizations. What motivates you?
I was raised with a sense of you do what you can for your family. And I grew up in the Midwest, so I had those Midwestern values. And the whole idea is you do what you can for your family, you do what you can for your friends. And during the initial AIDS crisis, and this was 30 years ago, we were going to funerals and memorial services once, twice, three times a week. And when you come through dealing with all of that loss, you have to find a way to help reaffirm what it is that you're doing and how you can help. And that's where I'm coming from. I get involved in a lot of different things, and it's always done in the memory of the friends that I have lost. because it helps me maintain a connection with them. It helps me keep their memories alive and helps reaffirm that I am doing what I can to help people because I wish somebody had been there to help them.
And I didn't experience that same period in the same way that you and so many other people that I know did. So for our younger listeners, tell me about why it's important for them, if they don't have that motivation to be involved in activism today, why is it important for them to get involved?
There's an old saying that if you don't pay attention, history will repeat itself. You know, we have listeners, and I'm sure you have listeners right now, that don't remember a world without cell phones. They don't remember a world without CDs. They don't know a world without AIDS. And it's the fact that there is this term that living with HIV, you just have to understand that before that happened, there was so much death and sadness within our community. And then even before that, you have listeners that don't even realize that the police used to do sweeps in the bars, that you could be arrested for just holding hands or kissing another man or another woman in a bar. There were the Compton cafeteria riots here in San Francisco that I'm sure that many of the listeners don't even know about, where the police were in the Tenderloin and were harassing the transgender customers that used to go in there all the time, and they fought back against the police. So I think what happens is that we have younger people that don't really know our history. We're a little bit at fault for that because many times, you know, you have older people in the community, and I know there are times when I get very tired and you just want to forget about it sometimes. You want to forget about the sadness. You want to forget about the pain and just try to put that away for a while. But the thing is that our younger listeners need to become involved. They need to be vigilant. They need to be out there and pushing for their rights. We don't have any victories in civil rights because we still don't have gay marriage in the state of California. We still have couples that one of them is a U.S. citizen and one of them could be a foreign national and they can be deported. We still don't have access to health care for all of the people within our community. And until we have all of that, we need to keep fighting. We need to keep pushing. And it's going to have to be some of the younger people in our community, and they're going to have to go back and realize that, you know what, 50, 60, 70 years ago, you couldn't hold hands. You couldn't kiss the person that you loved. You know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, today, you have couples that still have to file legal paperwork. So family members, if something were to happen to one of them, family members couldn't come in and keep the other partner from going to the hospital and visiting their loved one. That you don't have families that will come in, say on the death of one partner, come in and liquidate all the assets. And then that person who's been with that person for 20, 30 years in a loving, caring relationship is kicked out onto the streets. So until we have protections and until we have all the same rights that straight people in our community do, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people need to keep fighting. They need to keep looking forward with the lessons learned in the past, right in the forefront and in their minds.
So for someone who's listening and is feeling a sense of wanting to get involved, what advice would you give them? How do they begin? Where do they begin to look?
Here's what they do. What do they like to do? What's important to them? Then find an organization that fits those needs. And it doesn't have to be a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender organization. When I came into the police department, I had decided at the age of 39, I was never going back into my closet because it's a very dark and lonely place in there. Even though I do have some really nice shoes. But the thing is that you have to reach out. So when I got into the police academy, it was no secret that I was gay. And I credit that with changing the minds of a couple of the people that were in that class. And I have found that it's very difficult for people to hate something or someone that they know. So regardless of the organization, find something that interests them, find something that they like to do, and then seek out an organization like that. I always, when I host the parade, I always tell people during the telecast, I go, you know what, watch the parade. There's going to be almost 200 contingents of different viewpoints. There are going to be 200 over almost 200 organizations that you could become involved in. Something that strikes a chord within you, seek that organization out. Look for it. Volunteer. And you know what? If you don't see something in the parade, then go look elsewhere. You know, the internet is a great tool for becoming involved. Go out, volunteer. Even if you just give an organization 2 or 3 hours a week, that's 2 or 3 hours a week more than they had. And if you do that 4 times a month, that's 8 hours. That's almost a full work day that you can help them.
So as you look back, you know, at the history that you've experienced, and now looking forward to what promises to be a very exciting year with an election and so forth, you know, what are your hopes for our community in this coming year?
I hope our community finds its voice again. I hope that our community is able to decide what is important for us. And I would hope that our community would look back at the lessons that we've learned in the past and use those lessons to decide where we're going to go. You know, there are a lot of times where we're spinning our wheels on different things, but there are other times when there are important issues that come up and our community goes, well, that's not important to me, so it shouldn't be important to our community. I think anything that affects anyone within our community should be given some level of importance. And we need to learn the lessons from the past and look forward to the future. We need to get involved politically. You know, I mean, we need to raise our voices and our votes, you know, and support a government that supports us, or use it to change the government that would marginalize us and our concerns and our worries and our lifestyles.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't have said it better. Lenny, you're really an extraordinary role model in our community, and I appreciate for all that you do to make it better for all of us. Thanks for your hard work, and thanks for sharing your Sunday night with us here on Outbeat Now.
Thanks a lot, Greg. It was a pleasure being here.
And we're going to take a quick music break, but stay with us. Coming up next, it's the Outbeat Youth segment featuring the first installment of our Campus Pride National Voices in Action Spotlight Series.
Look right. your baby, but here's my number, so call me maybe. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe. And all the other boys try to chase me, but here's my number, so call me maybe. Boy, you came into my life, I missed you so bad, I missed you so bad, I missed you so, so bad. Before you came into my life, I missed you so bad, and you should know that, so call me maybe.
That was Carly Rae Jepsen with her recent hit Call Me Maybe. You're listening to Outbeat now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa.
Please put my soul, I feel love, I am so, so alive.
Good evening and welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. We're here every month as part of Outbeat Now. And tonight, we welcome back Shane Windmeyer, who's the Executive Director of Campus Pride, the nation's leading LGBT organization supporting colleges and universities. And he's going to talk about a couple of things, including our special series we're going to feature over this next school year that we're going to call the Campus Pride Voice in Action National Spotlight Series. Shane, welcome back to Outbeat Youth.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Well, this is a pretty exciting show. We're going to be talking about a couple of things with you tonight, including our special featured series coming up this year. But first, let's give it a kind of an update on what's going on with Campus Pride.
You know, Greg, we just got through with our national leadership camp called Camp Pride. It's a 5-day, 5-night camp. It was amazing. We have this year over 60 college students. We had a packed crowd. We sold out the camp. Some amazing entertainers, artists, leading, professionals in LGBT, social justice kind of organizations coming to camp. It was just amazing.
Now, where did you hold it this year?
Nashville, Tennessee. We've been there for 3 years now at Vanderbilt University.
So just give us a sense of what a young person comes out of that camp experience with. I mean, this sounds like a really amazing opportunity for young people. What are some of the things you hear when people leave camp that they take back to their own campuses?
You know, the Camp Pride experience is really unique. There's no other experience like it for college students. These are lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer, questioning, the whole spectrum of the LGBT rainbow. And these young adults are coming from campuses across the country. We had over 50 different colleges represented this year at camp, from, small, more rural campuses to large public institutions to religious affiliated campuses. I think for the fourth or fifth year, Notre Dame even sent students. They have an alumni group there, and the alumni who are gay fund an LGBT or an ally student to come every year. So it's really an amazing experience. And these young people leave with an action plan that they go back to their campus for the next year to implement on their campus related to, whatever they think is important, whether it be an LGBT program or changing a policy to be more inclusive of trans students. It truly is special. For a lot of our genderqueer trans students, it's sometimes the first time where they feel safe enough to use, kind of a gender pronoun or to explore their, their gender expression or their gender identity.
Sure. Tell us about some of the speakers you had.
Well, goodness, where to start? For I think the fourth or fifth year in a row, we've had Mara Kiesling. Mara is the executive director of the National Center for Trans Equality, an amazing advocate for trans, but just social justice. I mean, Mara's just a phenomenal leader in our movement. Mara's come to camp when it was up in D.C. She's come to camp now that it's in Nashville. And then we had Zach Walls, the young man who stood up to the Iowa legislature and said that his families matter with his two moms.
Right.
The number one, I think, political video on YouTube in 2011. So Zach was there.
I bet that was incredible.
Oh, amazing. And Zach actually received our National Voice in Action Leadership Award, which is an award that we give every year at camp. Last year, we gave it to Daniel Hernandez Jr., the young man, the college student who saved Representative Gabby Gifford's life.
That's right. There.
Yeah. So, we also had Everyone is Gay, the two women who started that organization. We had Justin Utley. Justin is a rock singer, songwriter, nationally acclaimed. You know, he grew up Mormon. He's, obviously left the Mormon faith, but he came out a few years back, created a wonderful single called Stand for Something.
That's right.
And he came to camp and just an amazing advocate and artist.
Great. Well, it's July. Most of our freshmen, college freshmen listeners are going to be thinking about going to a college. Maybe they're going to be moving away for the first time from home or going to a local community college. And, the college environment is clearly different than the high school environment, at least we hope. So let's spend a little bit of time. I mean, you've given us some great advice in the past for college freshmen, LGBT college freshmen who are, making their first appearance on a campus. What should they be thinking about before they get to school?
Well, obviously they spend a lot of time and energy picking that college, whether it be a two-year college or a four-year college. Some energy has went into finding the college and finding, the academic programs. And I think what's most important for an LGBT student or even a straight ally student is to find a place on that campus or an organization or connections to the campus that really make them feel welcome or feel comfortable, whether that be in the library, whether that be in the student union, whether that be a club or organization. But, research has shown that students that get involved beyond their academics actually feel more comfortable, more safe. They actually feel more invested in the college experience. And I think that's really what's most key. And for an LGBT student, that could mean a student group, such as, a GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. It could mean, finding a group like, the Student Activities Programming Board that is LGBT inclusive, but trying to find their connection. I think that connection to community is so important.
I'm just imagining myself, of course, it's been a few years since I graduated from high school, but I'm just imagining myself now as maybe a recently out gay man going off to college as a freshman and going into that dorm situation for the first time. Give us some advice. I meet my dorm mate. Should I come out right away? What's the best way to handle that?
Well, Greg, it's been a while since you've been in college. They actually have running water now. but today's college student, when they come to college, the housing situation, I do think, is potentially problematic because you're being put with a roommate that you don't know. Oftentimes, you don't know the person. If you're out, it's important that you feel safe, that you feel comfortable. And so the relationship you have with your roommate is key. The relationship you have with your resident assistant, the person who's in charge of that floor, is also important. And, as we learned with, 2 years ago, nearly 2 years ago, September 2010, with Tyler Clemente, that is a tragic story of a really bad roommate situation. And so you don't want to get yourself kind of stuck in the idea that just because you have a roommate, if you're afraid or fearful or just don't like it, make sure that they move you. Don't go and just put in a complaint, but say, I want to be moved. And I think that's really clear because the days of putting two students or four students in a room together and calling it the real world, and just that they'll somehow work it out, I think are slowly over. And so housing, I think it's important that the student try to get along with the roommate and try to create some sort of relationship. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, it's the college's responsibility to make sure you feel safe, especially where you have to sleep at night. So, I think by and large, I would say most roommates that you're going to run into, you can create a relationship with of respect and civility. But if that's not going to happen in that first week, 2 weeks, get out of that situation. Don't keep yourself in it.
What are you finding that colleges are doing now to sort of help that relationship get off to a good start? Are most colleges asking the question?
No, that's part of the problem is that colleges are accepting students that are out, that have been out since middle school or high school, and they're not allowing them the option to self-identify as LGBT. And so when it comes to housing, if there's gender-neutral housing or LGBT living learning communities, it's sometimes hard for students to select those housing arrangements as a way to to make them feel connected to the campus. And so, you know, more campuses need to take responsibility on the front end, whether it be the college admission form, whether it be the housing form. You know, Campus Pride has advocated not only for an optional question on the college admission form for LGBT students, but, you know, we've also advocated that housing professionals have roommate matching where students can choose their own roommate, or, you know, they could, you know, find a living learning community, a theme floor around social justice or LGBT issues. That's where housing is going. It's just that some campuses are still stuck in, you know, the 70s as far as forcing students to have to live together. And I think those days are slowly numbered.
Well, talk some about coming out of college. I mean, obviously that's a really great opportunity, or at least it could be a great opportunity. Maybe if a young person hasn't had a chance to come out at home because of whatever circumstances are there, what do you recommend for freshmen? Is that really a good time to come out?
Well, you know, it's situational. I think a lot of students are already out in high school. They're coming to college, and sometimes they go back in the closet for a while, and they're like, oh, I want people to get to know me, you know, or they're just fearful, and they don't want to be out. So I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag, and it depends on your campus and the environment of your campus. Obviously, I'm not going to tell a student, you know, at a religiously conservative campus that, yeah, be out, you know, on the moment you get to campus, but it comes down to your personal choice and where you believe in your heart your comfort lies and where you want to come out. And, you know, I came out in college my junior year. It took me a long time to get there. But when you're ready to come out, I don't think there's any reason to stop you. And if the college campus that you chose isn't right for you, then transfer.
Now, you mentioned gay straight alliances, and I would imagine that one of the first steps to coming out at a college campus would be to get involved in one of those organizations and build a network. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say Campus Pride is estimated about 60%, 58% of college campuses today have some sort of gay straight alliance. And that's kind of a shock to some people because they assume that all campuses do. And the problem with college campuses is the Gay Straight Alliance will start up 1 year, and then 4 years later, it'll be gone. And so, you know, if there's not a Gay Straight Alliance on campus, definitely if you have the leadership and you want to start one, start one. The key with any type of organization, though, is to make sure there's good transitioning so the organization stays alive. But where we've been as an organization in our advocacy work on college campuses is a Gay Straight Alliance is not an institutional commitment to LGBT safety or LGBT inclusion or LGBT diversity. At the end of the day, the college needs to take responsibility to help support that GSA. It's not the student's role to basically guarantee or to be responsible for their own safety. But still today, on about 90% of our college campuses, there's no institutional support for LGBT students. The responsibility, that safety, is on the backs of the LGBT student.
How would a student go about finding where these organizations are? Do they typically have visibility on the campus, either on the web or through signage?
Yeah, that's a good question. Each campus is different, and I think that's been one of the challenges for some students is that if you go to a campus website and you type the word gay, you don't always find the LGBT student group or the, you know, the Rainbow Alliance or the Pride or whatever they're called on the campus. And so it's very difficult. If you go to campusprideindex.org, our national index, when you visit the, you know, 330 plus colleges that are listed, many of the colleges list their LGBT group on that site. So that's a great resource. But otherwise, you know, the student activities office going in there and saying, hey, do you have a gay student organization, and trying to figure out what that is if you feel comfortable. Otherwise, you're kind of stuck in Facebook land or kind of in Google trying to find out where they're at, where they're located. Hopefully, you're going to a campus, though, that is out. You know, colleges need to come out and say, yep, we have a gay group, and be proud of that and make sure that there's signage and, you know, information and brochures, and it's not kind of hidden, you know, between the diversity resources.
So tell us a little bit more about the Campus Climate Index. You mentioned that, and it's an amazing tool for young people to look and research a college. Of course, if you've already made that commitment and you're already enrolled, tell us about some of the things a student can learn about their own institution just by going to the index now.
Well, that's a great question, Greg. you know, Campus Pride's index, the Campus Pride index really looks at climate, and it allows a high school student or a transfer student to find campuses that have basically come out as LGBT friendly, as gay friendly. And that index is a free resource to the college as well as to the high school student or the transfer student that are looking at gay friendly colleges. It's kind of one of those diamonds in the rough. It's a resource out there that we're trying to get more people aware of because it's just phenomenal. We put a lot of time, a lot of energy into keeping it updated every year. Colleges come back and update their information. But if you've already chosen a college, the good thing about it is you can go to the index and make sure your college is listed. That would be the first thing. The second thing, if it is listed, you know, look at the information there and try to find out what your college is doing really well, but also where your college can improve. And as a student leader, as an advocate for LGBT issues, whether you be gay or straight, you know, try to figure out if you can help change something while you're there for 2 years or 4 years or however long you're at college, and you know, maybe improve some of the things on the index for future students. So it's a great benchmarking tool for student leaders to work with administrators on improving their climate as well.
Great. And we'll have the link to that climate index on our website at outbeatyouth.com. You can go there after the show and click on that link. And I really encourage you to check out and investigate what is here and around you. For those of you here in California, there's a number of campuses, including a couple of community colleges that are listed on the index. And it'll give you a good flavor, a good sense of where that campus is in terms of supporting LGBT students. Let's switch gears for a second and talk specifically about transgender students, because I think they face a particular challenge depending upon where they are in their own transition process and their own sense of identity. Where are colleges in terms of supporting trans students?
Well, you know, in 2010, Campus Pride published our State of Higher Ed report, and it looked at the trans population of students, faculty, and staff, and how much they encounter harassment, how much they fear for their physical safety. And that report showed that trans students of color, disproportionately encounter harassment at greater percentages than their LGB, lesbian, gay, and bi counterparts, as well as fear for their physical safety. And so it obviously shares that in the report, it's quite evident in the, that it shares that trans students, there needs to be more attention placed on that population. Only 6% of colleges and universities have trans-inclusive non-discrimination statements. So again, that's quite alarming that if you look at basic non-discrimination statements, you know, there's not any inclusion of gender identity and gender expression. And then beyond that, gender-neutral restrooms that allow a trans student some privacy in choosing a restroom, whether that be a family restroom or single stall restrooms, you know, that's really important. Gender-neutral housing is picking up on some campuses, but it's a very small number of campuses still. So there needs to be more done for our trans students.
Well, let's talk a little about the difference between a public and a private school. If I'm headed to a private school and I identify as LGB or T, can I be kicked out if I'm discovered?
Well, it happens, yes, you can. A private campus is a private business, and currently in this country, there's no federal legislation that prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation for people. And so, you know, the classic would be Bob Jones or, you know, Liberty University. If they find out their student's gay, then they'll kick them out of campus. And that's one of the risks that you take in going to a private campus. And the sad thing is that there's a number of students at those campuses who are closeted or who are out maybe to themselves or to their friends, but are fearful of being kicked off campus.
So that could be particularly challenging if that's the case at the campus I'm at. If I'm suffering harassment or discrimination, if I come forward and talk about the reason for that, then I risk potentially being kicked out.
That's true. The good news is that that's a very small percentage of college campuses that are private that would have policies that would basically preclude an LGBT student from coming out. A perfect example is you have those far extreme campuses that I mentioned, and then you have a smaller percentage of campuses that are probably more religious-based and private that, you know, people can be out, but they're not going to create a gay-straight alliance for you like at Notre Dame. You know, for 15 years, there's been gay students at Notre Dame, but, you know, and they can go to school there, They just don't want to create any services or have a club or, you know, have sexual orientation in their non-discrimination statement. So, you know, that's kind of the more conservative religious campus where you can be gay on campus. We're just not going to support you with programs or services.
Sure. And I think the most important thing is, in terms of dealing with harassment, discrimination, is no matter what, if you feel unsafe because of harassment or threats you've received, kicked out or not, you should bring that forward.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, and that's where Campus Pride has really helped a lot of students at Notre Dame and Pepperdine, is to get them some attention nationally so that way we can change that campus environment so other students in the future don't have to experience the same negative or the harassment that they experienced. And so we've worked with a number of students. And actually this fall, Campus Pride is launching our Campus Pride in Faith, which is a coalition of LGBT students at more conservative religious-based campuses. And so that will be a new outreach population that we're working with in a more formal way. In the past, we basically have dealt with that more informally on a case-by-case, campus-by-campus basis.
Well, we've got a few minutes left, and I want to definitely talk about this special series that we're working with Campus Pride on this year to bring some really amazing guests to Outbeat Youth. Tell us about what's in store.
Yeah, so starting this fall, Campus Pride is very excited to collaborate with Outbeat Youth and do our Campus Pride Voice in Action National Spotlight Series. And we're going to have a number of topics ranging from student athletes to, you know, different issues around trans inclusion. And we're going to bring in national voices, LGBT students, national experts, even some celebrities, to talk with your audience through a special series that Campus Pride will have available as a podcast. And so we're super excited about that as a way to give voice and to create action for LGBT and ally college students.
Yeah, so let me talk a bit about some of the guests we're talking to and have lined up to be on the show. They include Anna Agnes, Kai Allum, Brian Sims, Joshana Holy, Paul Marcarelli. You know him from the Verizon commercials. He's the Can You Hear Me Now guy. And Zach Walls, who's the young man with two moms who spoke out in support of marriage equality in front of the Iowa State Senate. So the series will air live during the regular Outbeat Youth segment over the course of the coming school year, about every other month or so. And then, of course, the shows will all be available as a podcast on the Campus Pride website, and of course, as usual, on our own website and from iTunes. And I'm really excited about some of the topics we have planned for these guests to talk about.
You know, the other thing with the athlete segment, we'll be able to share, Greg, October, we'll be releasing our national report on LGBT college athletics. So we'll actually have that national report done by then and be able to share for the first time ever what are the experiences of college athletes who identify as LGBT across the country.
So stay on top of it. We'll have a schedule posted on our website at outbeatyouth.com and, of course, on the Campus Pride website as well at campuspride.org. Very, very exciting. And of course, we're thrilled to continue our work with Campus Pride, definitely one of our colleagues in helping educate the community about LGBT issues in the college and university community. Where can people go to learn more about Campus Pride?
Well, it's pretty simple, campuspride.org. Online, you can check out our blog, our resources. You know, we have a webinar series that we do in the fall and the spring where it's very affordable for campuses to learn about a variety of topics. And so campuspride.org.
Very good. And give us the website one more time for the Campus Climate Index.
Yeah, so you can reach it through campuspride.org, but the direct URL is campuspride.index.org. That's campuspride.index.org.
Fantastic. And again, we'll have the links to both of those sites on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Shane Windmeyer, Executive Director of Campus Pride, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's so great to be with you, Greg.
And that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember to follow us all month long on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter, where you can get show reminders and be the first to know about our upcoming Campus Pride National Voices in Action Spotlight Series. Listen and download our shows from iTunes and, of course, from our own website at outbeatyouth.com. See you next month.
I'm Daniel Radcliffe, and I believe that reaching out for help is the bravest thing a person can do. If you are struggling and need support, call the Trevor Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. It's free and confidential, and trained counselors are there to listen 24/7 without judgment. To learn more about the Trevor Project's life-saving work for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning young people, go to thetrevorproject.org.
And that also wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Now. Jeff and I will be back on the fourth Sunday of August with a conversation about the intersections of Christianity and sexuality, with special guests from the local and national religious community. And on the Outbeat Youth segment, we'll continue with this same theme as we talk with a young gay man who was studying to become a Baptist minister at Samford University in Alabama. Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Extra. I'll be back with Gary Carnevale talking with more hopeful candidates running for office this November, and we'll be asking them about their views on a variety of issues important to the LGBT community. That's at 8 p.m. next Sunday night right here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. And don't forget, if you've missed an Outbeat Radio show, you can always listen to them on our website at outbeatradio.com. Thanks for spending your Sunday night with me. Have a great week. Good night. I'm not afraid to